Good afternoon. Thank you for coming to this session. And as someone who was born just a couple miles away at Baptist Hospital on Napoleon Avenue, welcome to New Orleans, and thank you for coming to the APHA conference here in our city. We're very proud to have the opportunity to speak to you today about racial disproportionality in school discipline and the connections to the school-to-prison pipeline. My name is Brian Jaffe. I'm a project director at AASA. We are a school superintendents association, so we work with school leaders all across the country, implementing lots of projects and programs and initiatives that affect children in a multitude of ways around health and childhood obesity, getting children signed up for health insurance, working with students with asthma, academic access, college access, all across the board. And in this project, we worked on trying to solve the issues around school discipline, particularly the disproportionality for African American students. My boss, Sharon Adams Taylor, is here today. She's really the leader of all of this work. Under her direction, we do all of these efforts for children, and she's really pulling the strings, and she was gracious enough to let me present our work to you all today. So I wanted to start. I'm going to go over some data, talk to you about how these young children, these young people that we care so much about, sometimes end up with the presentations that you're going to hear after me in terms of recidivism and under supervision and surveillance, and we're hoping that they don't, but I'm going to try to connect the dots for how this works and highlight what a problem it can be. So the first thing is that you should know, if you don't already, that in the last 20 years, the law and order society, where we work to punish students and people of all types more so than get support, has trickled down into the school system as well. So the use of out-of-school suspension has doubled in the last 20 years. And that's an issue because the vast majority of those suspensions are for minor infractions. So it's not that our students have become more violent or more prone to drug use or alcohol or things that might be worthy of some school discipline. It's that we're now treating disruptions and tardiness and dress code violations, defiance and disobedience, by removing and excluding students from the school process. I wanted to highlight a groundbreaking study in the field, Breaking School Rules, which is a longitudinal study of 1 million students in Texas. It was done by Texas A&M University in conjunction with the Council of State Governments. This really galvanized the Department of Education, the Department of Justice, really brought this issue to light in a meaningful way for people around the country, and now you've seen in the last 3 years since this report came out a big movement towards how do we solve this problem. So what it found for these 1 million students was that only 3% of suspensions were for mandatory offenses. So that's, again, drugs, weapons at school, real incidents of violence, alcohol abuse. The other 97% of times that we're removing students from school are for issues that could presumably otherwise be handled better. They're for talking back, for wearing your hat, for your cell phone, for not showing up to class, for showing up late. I'm going to show you why that's a problem, because of all these suspensions are happening. I'm going to show you who they're happening to and what happens to students that are suspended. So that's an issue. 15% of students in the study were suspended 10 or more times, which I think pretty clearly demonstrates that it's not working very well as a deterrent either. If it takes 10 or more times, then almost 1 in 5 students are suffering that. 31% of students suspended even one time repeated that grade. And since we're at APHA and we have lots of great researchers and others here, you'll know I'm not making a causal statement there, but certainly a correlation. So is it that students that are online to repeat the grade are acting out and getting suspended, or is it that students that experience discipline end up falling behind and repeating the grade? We can't say from this data in particular, but we can say those things are linked very heavily. Students that are disciplined and students that have academic struggles. And so I would argue that rather than suspend those students in the hopes that that boost their scores, that maybe we should support those students in different ways rather than excluding them from school. The reason we're here, thanks to the Black Caucus of Health Workers organizing this session, is that the study uncovered terrible racial disproportionality that affected Latino, but especially African American students. And also, the one positive note was that there was high school-to-school and district-to-district variance. So that means that districts of similar size and similar demographics would have very different outcomes. So some suspended lots of students and some didn't. Some had disproportionality for their African-American students and some didn't. And the reason that's a positive is that means we can do better through policy and practice changes and systems of support, that it's not an unsolvable problem, that some schools and districts are already working towards that. Let's talk about race. A lot of times in this work, when we talk about school discipline and juvenile justice, you'll hear poverty, you'll hear parent education, you'll hear single-parent households, you'll hear lots of things that sometimes correlate with race but are not about race. You'll hear things that are sometimes smoke screens that make us feel better about why some students are treated differently or why some students are falling behind. So in this analysis, there were 83 different variables that could be controlled for, race being one. So isolating race only, apart from poverty, apart from parent education, apart from single-parent households or anything else, race was identified as a significant determinant of school discipline actions, and African-American students were 31% more likely to be suspended out of school compared with identical white and Hispanic students. So we can talk about the issues of poverty, which are great, and our students that come with trauma and other issues, but we can also say specifically that race, in and of itself, and nothing else, is a major factor in the way students are treated. So another way to look at that, I like this one in particular because of the one on the right that I'll get to in a second. So looking at discretionary actions in the ninth grade, using white students as our comparison group, as I said, African Americans were 31% more likely to be suspended out of school, and Hispanic students were about equal to our white comparison group. Looking at the mandatory actions that we talked about, so real issues, drugs, weapons, violence, African-American students were actually 16% less likely to experience that kind of suspension in ninth grade. Hispanic students were slightly more likely. So not only are African-American students not coming to school with as many mandatory actions and then facing even more discretionary actions, so there, it's definitely not a problem with the students. We can identify that very clearly. One of the districts we worked with is Houston Independent School District. This is just their male population. They have about 116,000 boys that attend school in Houston. About a quarter of those are African American. You'll see as we go across, those African American students accounted for over half of all the out-of-school suspensions in the district. So vastly disproportionate in terms of how much they were suspended. The middle chart there is the in-school suspensions. And if you'll notice as you go down from our white students at the top, they had about the same number of in-school and out-of-school suspensions. Our Hispanic males, roughly the same. And our African-American males had twice as many out-of-school suspensions as in-school suspensions. So first, they make up more than half of the out-of-school suspensions, which shows that they're disciplined more often. And then they receive far more out-of-school suspensions than a much preferable in-school suspension, where you still have to show up to school, where you're in a classroom, where you have a teacher who might have 7 to 10 students of different grades, but you're getting some academic access. And they had half as many of those, showing they're also treated more harshly. Another trend that we've seen in districts we work with gets us to our good news, bad news. This is San Francisco Unified School District. So over a two-year period, they went from about 2,500 suspensions to about 1,200. So they cut their out-of-school suspensions in half, which is great. So we're proud of them, and long way to go, but that's excellent. But the proportion didn't change. So if we know African-American students are disproportionately suspended, when you reduce suspensions, you would hope to see the greatest reduction among our African-American students. So that blue, red, green is 2012, 2013, 14. We have our African-American students on the left. So even though suspensions are cut in half, they're actually slightly greater proportion, but let's just call that the same. Basically, they're the same percentage of the suspensions now. So while they only make up half of 1,200 suspensions, which is a plus, they shouldn't be making up half of the suspensions at all. And our Latino students are all the way on the right, and they remain at about a third, even as suspensions have dropped in half. Which shows that there are two different problems. One is, why are we suspending so many students so much of the time? And two is, how do we tackle this issue of disproportionality? Because they're not the same. You can reduce your reliance on suspension, you can reduce your push-out and exclusion, and still have disproportionality problems. So we're in this session today as we're going to talk further about more serious issues, because this disproportionate minority contact in school discipline leads to serious issues. So looking, backtracking from students that are in juvenile justice and asking them or surveying them and finding out how many of them have had discipline issues, only 2% haven't had any out-of-school suspensions. 7% have had only one incident at school, and this was done in our research study to show that students that are suspended or expelled for a discretionary violation, and this is just discretionary, this isn't drugs or weapons, are 3 times more likely to have juvenile justice contact. So there's a troubling correlation between the way students are treated in school and the way they end up in our systems. The goal of all educators all the time should be that whenever possible to keep students as far from juvenile justice and the criminal justice system as possible. It's possible that there are incidents at school that require that kind of support, but those are few and far between that a real crime would ever happen on a school campus. And unfortunately, sometimes school resource officers, campus police, are used to supplement disciplining, keeping up the school code, and that's something we're working with districts to fight, because school issues should be handled at school, and crime should be handled by our juvenile and criminal justice system. So unfortunately, these students that we've seen, more likely to be black, more likely to be suspended more often, have a much higher percentage of being contacted with juvenile justice. This is an issue because looking around our country, when we think about the students that are currently detained in a juvenile justice facility, about two-thirds of them are there for non-serious offenses. And this is detained. This is held. This is overnight. Breaking school rules, running away, missing hearings, the kind of things that happen for our students, our underserved population, when you don't have access to services, when you get a summons, and then you don't appear to, you know, deal with that with a magistrate or a juvenile justice officer, then all of a sudden we've got a detention situation because you're absent from that. Only about a third of our juvenile justice detainees are there for what we would consider serious offenses like drug distribution and violence. So these students are suspended from school. They're more likely to have some sort of juvenile justice contact. That contact leads to being detained in juvenile justice facilities. And we know from other research that students that come in contact with juvenile justice are far more likely to end up in our criminal justice system as adults. As you might guess, juvenile justice and dropout are highly linked. Controlling for other factors, again, an arrest during high school doubled the chance of dropping out, and a court appearance quadrupled the youth's chances of dropping out. So, again, we want to make sure those arrests and court appearances are severely warranted. But there's a real reason that we're asking students to have contact with these systems, because far too often it's for reasons that are nebulous, around defiance, around culture, around bias, and not for weapons and violence and things that might be worthy of that. So what was our organization's reaction? At ASA, again, the School Superintendents Association, we partnered with the Children's Defense Fund. We saw funding from the Atlantic Philanthropies, and we've worked with districts across the country to analyze their discipline policies and implement changes. The five districts we worked most closely with are the Houston Independent School District, Woodland Hills, which is in Pittsburgh, School District U46, which is in Cook County, Illinois, just outside of Chicago, Racine, Wisconsin, and Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And we're very proud of our work with these districts. Working with them just for the last year, we've only been with them for 12 months, we've seen really good changes, which I'm going to get to. But the biggest thing that's happened is that leaders that care about this issue, that shine a light for building principles for teachers and for others, that say, we don't want our African-American students pushed out. We don't want to see suspensions of kindergartners and first-grade students for kicking somebody's chair. We don't want our students to ever be home. We're going to be here every day as schools, as teachers, as faculty, and we want our students here every day. And we're going to find a place in the building for them. We're going to find access to services and academics. You may not get to go to your classroom. You may not get to participate in some activities after school. There should be consequences for actions, but it's not going to be that we leave you at home without supervision. So what were some of the successes? I just wanted to highlight these folks and shout them out for their good work. In Pittsburgh and Woodland Hills, they reduced out-of-school suspension just from 2013 to 14 by 10%. The only things they've done so far were some small revisions in the code of conduct. They're working hard to write a whole new code that really shows a different face of school discipline and is really about educating and supporting our students rather than policing and harassing them. And they've highlighted the data. And I say that because a lot of times I think this disproportionality maybe was something people saw or anecdotally or thought about, but they didn't see it in those graphs, and they didn't understand how disproportionate it was, because you might only be disciplining a few students at a time. And the dean is seeing which students come in and might not understand that the white students aren't coming into the office. Woodland Hills is also an interesting one to highlight because their population is 70% African-American. So they're a large majority African-American district. They should have a high number of African-American percentage suspended, but it shouldn't be 95%. It shouldn't be disproportionate even with a large majority. So we saw Houston, which is a minority African-American district, disproportionate. But even in high African-American population districts, they're often still disproportionately suspended. In Racine, they reduced out-of-school suspension by more than 15%. The superintendent there has been sending an email to principals every week to say how many students were suspended and what the race and demographics of those students were. And as you know from all good research, what gets measured gets done, and all of a sudden those rates start coming down and the disproportionality comes down a little bit. Just by saying, I'm going to be watching you, and I care about this, and you're going to send me your numbers every week, watch them come down. They've also implemented a lot of alternatives in terms of positive behavior intervention supports, more in-school suspension, more alternative opportunities for students. In U46, they've reduced out-of-school suspension by more than 20%. I talked about those academic students that are behind, talked about issues of poverty and others. What they've done is taken three separate silos in their district, one around school safety, which is those school resource officers, security, one around school discipline, the assistant principals, the deans, the folks that are actually suspending the students when they come with a referral, and then their student support services. So those are students that need counseling, that need academic support. They've really woven them together to say these are the same students, and in one way we're treating them with discipline, in another way we're giving them supports for academic or other issues and counseling and things they might need. In another place, we're just standing there as security and trying to have this kind of safety posture. So they've worked together to identify what they call their 2-5 students, which are students that missed more than 5 days of school and had academic troubles, D's or F's, in more than 2 courses, and to try to find those students, provide them with some support rather than trying to suspend their way to higher test scores. So lastly, I just wanted to go over a few strategies. I've talked to some of those already. I have the flashlight there because that's the biggest one. We have to shine a light on what's happening in school discipline, how it connects to juvenile justice and criminal justice, and really find ways to combat this just first and foremost by saying it's a problem, let's address it. Employing alternative disciplinary actions that keep students in school. So sometimes you get pushback on this from people that want to hold children accountable and say you can't talk to teachers any old way, you can't come to school late. There are accountability for your actions, and that's fine, but those actions need to keep students in school where they can have access to a teacher and learn, maybe separated from their peers, maybe on their own. We have to increase the supports for those students in need. As I said, they're academically, socially, emotionally in need. Suspension's probably not going to cure them of any of those things. It's probably not going to help them get academic support when they're home alone all day. So find the students that need the most support and provide wraparound supports for them. We definitely have to improve training for staff, particularly around implicit bias. So we know from the data we went over that race is a major factor, and this is with white teachers especially, but black teachers too have often suspended black students disproportionately. So we have to find why that is around bias. We have to have courageous conversations and talk about how often we're suspending our black students. De-escalation techniques is one they've used in U46. So how often are adults escalating issues with students around disrespect, disrespecting them further, causing a problem, creating posture that isn't around de-escalation but around, you know, a very aggressive nature towards our students. So de-escalation techniques have been successful in a number of places, which is a sad state that that's what we often do for our police and security, and maybe that our teachers need to learn de-escalation, but if it helps keep our students in school and learning, that's important. We have to work to improve overall school climate and then investigate other research-driven strategies to keep students in school, and I'm out of time.